Welcome to Ink in Your Veins. I'm your host, Rachel Herron. In this podcast, I talk to authors about the best things they've learned about writing so we can try those things too. I'll keep each episode short so you can get back to writing. Well, hello, writers. Welcome to episode number 418 of Ink in Your Veins. I'm Rachel Herron, and I am so thrilled that you are here with me today with Sarah Jane Collins. And we are going to talk about something. We're going to talk about a bunch of things. We're going to talk about killing darlings and collecting, cheekily collecting conversations around you. But really importantly, we're going to talk about the post-release crash, the dip that we go into oftentimes after publication, especially for the first few books. It can be brutal, and we do not talk about it enough. I don't talk about it enough. I forget to talk about it. I am so glad it came up in this conversation, and you're really going to enjoy this conversation. So that is coming up in a moment. What has been going on around here? Well, the Kickstarter pre-launch. The pre-launch is actually live. It really is a thing. I can't tell you how much I would appreciate it if wherever you are sitting, if you're in your car, pull up a web browser. If you're at your desk, can you swing over and go to rachelherron.com/unstuck? rachelherron.com/unstuck. That'll take you, that's a redirect link right to the Kickstarter page. And can you please just click on the notify me when it's live? It doesn't even matter if you're going to support the Kickstarter or not. What that does is it helps this page and the algorithm somehow. It just helps Kickstarter know that it's real and that people want to know about it. And somehow that could be good for me. And I'd very much appreciate it if you did that. I told you about this 2 weeks ago, and it took me quite a while to make everything live because I had two technical problems. And one of them was a doozy. Kickstarter does take so much more than I thought it would. And it's been a challenge and such a satisfying one. So within the next couple of weeks, it will be live, and I will tell you about that. But the pre-launch apparently is important. So if you could push that button, you're under no obligation to do anything ever, but it would help me out. And it's free. It's a free push. rachelherron.com/unstuck. I would so appreciate that. That is live. And oh my goodness, this is TMI, but my dog has been a little bit sick, and she's under my desk, and something just hit my nose that suggests her stomach is still upset. And there, I shared that with you. That's real life. So this intro is going to be short because apparently she needs to go out again. I just lost 6 listeners because I said that. Junebug, however, is doing well. She knows I'm saying her name. She finished her rally obedience class, which was getting her around normal dogs who are not reactive, which is hard for her. And she was able to focus on me and our team and doing the training and doing commands and going around in circles and doing weird things. And we just had such a great time. We graduated from that. And now we are allowed to go to the rally-o, I don't know, more things, more dog things. But it was her gotcha day this week. We have had her for 1 year, and it has been such a wonderful year and also a really difficult year as we learn what a reactive dog means and what kind of care they take. And I am in love with her. She's my dog. I've never had a dog like this who is my dog. And it makes me so happy. Can't remember if I said this on the podcast. I said it to somebody recently, but the other night I was in the bath in our house. Our walls are kind of porous. We can hear everything that everybody does or says in every room, which I do not like. And I was in the bath and I was listening to Lala and my sister have a conversation about Junebug. Every night at 8 p.m., she gets a pill. She is not only has excellent training and a lot of it, but she is on anti-anxiety medication, which helps her be able to learn. It's been fantastic. And every night at 8, Lala's watch beeps and says, "Ooh, it's time for Junebug's cheese pocket," which she loves to get. She loves to have it. But she hates the sound of it because she hates the sound of phone alarms or beeps or anything like that. It freaks her out and she runs away. She goes and hides in my sister's room. And I also hate the sound of a phone doing anything. Beeping, squawking, stresses me out. I get anxiety. I feel like I'm doing something wrong. And I heard Lala say to Bethany, And she went to go get Junebug out of the room so she could have her medicine. I heard Lala say, Rachel's not dead. But if Rachel was dead, I would think this dog is her ghost. And I laughed out loud because, yes, we are very, very, very similar. I'm going to pause this so I can let her out. Okay, I'm back. She is a cuddle-tastic delight, just a pocket full of joy. And I just worship her. If you want to look at her, if you want to see her cute little face, over at instagram.com/Rachel Heron, you can look at her because basically it's turned into an all dogs all the time podcast. And I did a little slideshow of our first year together. And she's a heart dog. We've had many animals in the past, and you love all your animals. You love all your pets. You love them with all your heart. But every once in a while, you get that heart creature. And Digit, my cat, was a heart cat. And this dog is my heart dog. So yeah, it's wonderful. Anyway, that's our anniversary. That's what's going on around here. And let's talk about what's going on with Sarah Jane Collins. Sarah Jane Collins is a writer, editor, and journalist from Mianjin, Brisbane. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. Australia, who moved to New York by way of Gadigal Land, Sydney, and Narm, Melbourne. Her work has appeared in The Age, the Sydney Morning Herald, Mianjin, Overland, and others. She has an MFA in fiction from Columbia University. Her fiction has won the Overland Fair Australia Prize and has been shortlisted for other awards. Although New York is her home now, she misses the beaches of Australia, but not the spiders. Radiant Heat is her debut thriller. Please enjoy this interview. Please get a little bit of your own writing done. And then please come find me and tell me about it, because I love to hear it. All right. Happy writing, everybody. Well, I could not be more pleased to welcome you to the show. Hello. Will you please share your name and your pronouns with us?
Yeah, I'm Sarah Jane Collins, and my pronouns are she and her.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And welcome to the show. I really enjoyed Radiant Heat. This is your debut thriller, right?
Yes.
And I noticed the word debut thriller. Is it debut book or debut thriller? Is this your first book out?
It's my first book. And it's
Yay, congratulations.
Yeah, I mean, it's a thriller, but I would say it's not just a thriller. So not to put that kind of just is the wrong word, but you know.
Yeah, no, it does a lot in here. And as an ex-fire dispatcher, I live in New Zealand now, but I lived in California. You got all that fire stuff, right? It was terrifying.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about what led you to write this book? And this show is particularly about writing process. What led you to write it, and how did you write it?
Sure. So what led me to write it is I was a journalist in Australia at the Age newspaper in Melbourne. For a while in the 2000s, I'm dating myself there, but it was my first job out of university, and I covered the county court round, and I was covering that round when the Black Saturday bushfires happened in Victoria, which, for people who aren't familiar, were at the time the biggest natural disaster Australia had ever seen. 173 people lost their lives, and it was just something that blindsided everyone. Nobody saw it coming, and the extent of the devastation was just beyond what anyone could have possibly ever comprehended or imagined until it had happened. So I was not sent out to cover the actual fires, because there was, at the same time, the same week, there were like three massive trials on in the courts. So my boss was like, stay here. But in the months afterwards, I changed rounds to state politics. And so I was following the Premier of Victoria around the state for the next year. And most of what he was doing when he was traveling around the state in the next year was meeting with people about reconstruction projects for people who had lost their homes and their friends and families in the fires. So I spent a lot of time in that country hearing those stories and meeting those people. And it never went away. It kind of was just something that stayed with me in my heart and in my brain after I left that job and after I left Victoria. And I had some free time one day, and I hadn't been doing much writing. So I just kind of was like, I just want to play around and write something. And that's what came out. Pretty much, actually, most of the first chapter was the first thing I wrote and the first draft.
Wow, and that is not common.
There's definitely some revisions in there, but it's
Of
like
course.
I did revise it, d revising, and then I went back and changed it back almost. So, I think that's a newspaper journalism skill, being able to write something clean first time, because you kind of you come in at the end of the day and you've got a deadline in 25 minutes and you've got to give them 800 words of decent copy. So you get good at that. You get good at clean first drafts. But yeah, I wrote that first chapter and then I sat with it for a while and I thought, what do I really want to say with this? And the other thing that kept coming up for me were these women that I had met and encountered whilst I was covering the courts, and the experiences that they had faced, and the ongoing, just constant reporting of horrible stories like that in the Australian media. We have a really, Australia has a really high rate of intimate partner violence, and more one, I think it's a woman a week, but sometimes it can be more than that, is murdered,
Oh my goodness. Wow.
dies in an intimate partner violence situation in Australia, and that is a horrific statistic. So yeah, I mean, I guess all those things were just kind of floating around in my mind, and I started writing, and I went with it. Where does my brain want to go? And that's where it went. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. So when you are doing the writing, when and where and how much, where do you fit it into your life?
So I was very lucky, and I feel very fortunate to have had the ability to take a couple of years in the second half of last decade to come to New York and do a master's of creative writing at Columbia. And while I was there, I really worked a lot on the book. My thesis was a draft of the book, although it's quite different to where we are now. And so, every week I had to make time to write because it was part of my degree. So for that period of time, that was a really great opportunity to kind of learn a lot about craft, but also to learn a lot about discipline and about, the only way you're ever going to get your book written is if you actually just sit down and write it. And that sounds really obvious, but I have so many friends who are wonderful writers who I went through that program with, who are still, talking about when they're going to have the time to write. And so yeah, I guess that was a really lucky time for me, and I really just embraced it. I also, for the first time since I finished my undergraduate degree, I wasn't really working, and I had time to just write, which is a big thing that we maybe don't talk about enough, is having a full-time job and writing another book, a book which is also basically a full-time job, is a lot to do at once. And then after I finished my course and I was working again, I just would go, I write at night. So I would go to a bar around the corner from my house with my laptop and just sit there and write, because I love it to be noisy. Has to be loud. And that again, I think, is a learn to write in a newspaper office kind of situation, because everyone comes back from their day out reporting, the clacking of the keys and people standing up and going, "What's another word for this?" and somebody else yells across the newsroom, so like you need that kind of banter and the feeling of other people around you. Well, I need it anyway. So yeah, I write in noisy, dingy bars, preferably with no Wi-Fi, because that way I can't get distracted.
I love that. So you kind of just answered this next question, but if you have anything else to add, I would love to know. What specific things help you most to write?
Obviously, yes, noise
Noise.
and people around. Good conversation. I know that sounds weird, but I think during COVID, I talked to a lot of my writer friends about this, that during that isolated period where you weren't going out into the world and having conversations that often, spontaneous conversations that often with other people, but also you weren't able to overhear the couple on the subway having a fight, or the mom and the kid in the line at the grocery store. Like you didn't get any of these kind of little slices of moments of life in your brain anymore. I found that to be an incredibly tough time to come up with things, because there wasn't just like the general noise of humanity of just like around at all times to kind of absorb. And I think most writers are sponges. We like we see something or we hear something and we grab onto it, and we kind of it gets nestled away in our brain as a kernel of something for some other time.
That's
So yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess conversation and the other thing, which sounds maybe a little bit silly, but well, no, it's not silly. It's just how my brain works. A museum, just going and staring at some paintings that I love. Those are my main things.
I love
Yeah.
doing that too, and I never do it as often as I could. But I also love what you said about the conversation, and I'm realizing that during those times when we were in lockdown, we were still, I was still consuming media, and I was hearing conversations and watching television and watching reality TV and watching whatever it was. But it's the casual brushing up against conversation and how it gloms onto our life lived in the moment. I was on my way somewhere just the other day, and I just walked past two men who were probably coworkers, and one just said, "The only good thing about Tim is that he brings Tim Tams," and just like, I was like, that you don't get that in a show. Everything is scripted in a show. Like, we don't. So yeah, that's beautiful. Okay, what is the most exciting thing that you ever realized about your creative, about your writing process?
I think the most exciting thing is just that moment where I've finished something. Like it might just be a scene, or it could be a whole chapter, it could be a whole story, or a whole poem, or a whole book. And I get to share it with someone else and ask them what they think about it. And I don't know about you, but I know you can't write a book with, well, you can write a book with someone else, but typically writing is an act that is done alone. And it can feel very lonely and very isolated, but it's such a wonderful moment when you've gotten your words to a point where you can finally show them to someone else and hear what they have to say about it. Even if what they have to say about it isn't great, it's still like this moment of human connection where you feel seen because somebody is reading your work. And if they do love it or they do have a great suggestion on how to make it better, then you've also just like had this little moment of alchemy with somebody that you're close to or somebody that you admire. So that's the magic for me, is those moments of connection.
I am thinking about my partner, and when she reads my books, that's like the moment. She usually gets my books when I send them to my agent, like right at the same time. And my agent, whatever, she that's her job. But my partner, I can never wait to hear what she says. And a few times she has pissed me off. But she's always right. But most of the time she's, totally on board, and that's amazing. What part of writing do you struggle with the most?
The discipline part of it, the part where, I'm at the bar and I've had two drinks and I've only written 1,000 words. I said I was going to write 2,000, and somebody I know walks in the door and I really just want to talk to them. I don't want to write another 1,000 words. That's the hardest part, is the forcing yourself to do it when it's hard part. But it's also the most rewarding, I think, because sometimes that's the best stuff, the stuff that you're like, you're dodging writing it because you're like, you think it's an emotionally difficult moment, or you're not entirely sure what your character is going to decide to do and you're uncomfortable about it. And then you get through it, and that's really satisfying. So, yeah.
It's the best. Can you share a craft tip of any sort with us?
Oh, a craft tip. I think you just have to be really, 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 like, this is an old one and it's a cliche, but you have to be prepared to listen when somebody says, you might love this bit, but you don't need it. It's going to be better if you get rid of it.
And we
Like,
will
you
fight
have
that
to,
to the death sometimes.
there was a whole, there was a whole section that I had to cut out of Radiant Heat that I didn't want to at all. Like, it survived like three edit passes, and I was like, no, I've done this instead, and like whatever. And then eventually I was just, no, we don't actually need it, so fine. And we cut it out, and I reread it, and I was like, yeah, fine, whatever, we didn't need it.
You
I
were
guess I can
right.
admit that.
It's
That's the
there. They're
hard, I that's yeah,
darlings
I
for a
mean,
reason, and we love them because we wrote them well, and because they are
right.
moving and they're doing something. They're just not doing what we need to be done at that point. And
Right.
I've learned
And
that most of
that's
my editors are always right. I am. They are a professional about that, but it's so hard. It's so hard.
Taking away is always the hardest part. But I had an editor at, well, there was a senior journalist at the paper I worked on, and she was sort of a person I would go to for advice when I was stuck with a story. And I remember I was assigned this feature. It was 2,000 words, which is a big feature for a newspaper. I was really nervous about it. I'd done all the interviews, I'd transcribed all the interviews. I was like, trying to get it all together, but I just couldn't write it. Like, I was just sitting there staring at the page, going, what am I, how do I even start this? And she walked past my desk. She said, what are you doing? I was like, oh, I'm just trying to figure out like how to start this. And she said, just start it. And then when you finished it, go back and delete the first paragraph. And I went, what? And she went, do it. And I was like, okay. So I started and I wrote it and I went back and I deleted the first paragraph. So I was like, that's exactly what I needed to do.
Why did that work? Right.
Because it's like your brain is vomiting all the information out onto the page, right? And it's trying to get it all there. And especially if you're writing something that's not like a straight who, what, where, why lead. If you're writing something, you're trying to be a little bit more creative and clever with it, you can get so caught up and bogged down in so many details. And then if you just delete that first paragraph, all of it just flows from there.
That is brilliant. Yeah. And I find that happens a lot with first chapters of first drafts. So that's why I'm just like so in awe of yours. That is really uncommon, but the same kind of thing. Yeah.
I mean, I went back and rewrote the first chapter at in grad school because somebody said this just starts too quickly. Like I need more setup. And so I went and wrote a whole new version of the first chapter with a whole bunch of setup. And it stayed there for ages. And then my agent, when she got it, she was like, I don't think we need any of this. And like, and I went, well, I didn't want that in the first place.
I knew it. That's gorgeous. What can you share a mindset tip that you have learned about being a writer?
Oh, just I think try not to be too anxious about everything working perfectly all of the time, which is possibly the most unhelpful mindset tip for a writer that you could possibly give. But
how do you do that? How do you work that in?
Oh God, I don't at all. I watch too much TV that I've already seen, and I like hide in my room, and I try not to look at Goodreads reviews or think too much about all that stuff. But I don't know. I think the thing about this work is it is so weird and kind of like singular in the way that people experience what happens after you've, put your book out into the world, or after you've sold a book, or after you've scored an agent, or whatever milestone you're hitting. I don't know about you, but for me, like having wanted to do this my whole life, every time I hit a milestone, I had this crash. Like I was like, okay, well, I did the thing now.
Not talk about that crash enough. We really don't.
Yeah. And it's like, well, okay, but that doesn't, there's still a next thing and then a next thing. And then even after you've done the whole thing and put the book out, there's still the next book and the next book. And like, what are we doing next? So there's no chance. It doesn't ever feel like there's a moment to take stock and be proud of yourself and the things that you've done. And maybe that's just me, like maybe that's just my hypercritical of myself mindset, but
I teach a lot and that seems pretty universal.
I think that's everyone really. And I have quite a few good friends who have published wonderful books in the last few years, and they all, we all kind of talk to each other, and as we were getting closer to my pub date, the ones that had already had theirs, we're checking in and going, how are you feeling? Like, I just feel weird. I just feel really weird. And I'm like, yep, that's the feeling. That's how it feels. So yeah, I don't know, mindset. Lean on the people that you trust and don't give up, I guess, which is very pokey, but
no,
yeah.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. And mind the crash. Have the people around you to help you get through the crash. Cause I know what I expected when I was first published was like, and then everything will change, but nothing changes.
Yeah.
I'm still just me. Yeah. I'm just the same me I was. Except now I'm a published author, which really doesn't mean as much as I ever thought it would. It's wonderful, et cetera, forever. But it's I love that you said that. What is the kindest thing that you've ever done for yourself as a writer?
I think I actually did it today. I booked myself in for a couple of nights at this bed and breakfast that I really like upstate. And my plan is to just go and sit there and do edits on the next thing I'm working on and, not get too bogged down in what's happening with everything else and what else is going on. And I think we have to do that. We have to take time to just step back from everything and spoil ourselves a little bit. And that's why today I was like, you know what, I'm going to do that. I'm going to book this. And
I
now I'm
love
looking
that.
forward to something,
I try to do that every quarter or so. I go away, and I just got back from one where I could swim off of the front porch,
Oh
and
my God, amazing.
I just work and read and sleep and eat, and that's it. I don't talk to anybody. You're gonna have such a fun time.
Yeah.
Have you ever done this before?
Not officially. Like I've done like versions of it where I've been on holidays with other people and I've just kind of
Nah,
disappeared.
we gotta
But
be
this is
alone.
just me time. Yeah.
Oh. You're gonna
It'll
love it. You're gonna love it.
be good.
What is the best book that you have read recently, and why did you love it?
Oh, such a hard one. I have so many books recently that I've loved, but I think the one that I'm sorry, the reason I'm looking over here is because my bookcase of things that I've read is like right there. But I think the thing I read most recently that I truly love the most and recommended to other people the most is This Time Tomorrow by Emma Straub. I don't know if you've read that.
I loved that one. It was so fun. She's so good. She's so annoying that she's just like beautiful writing, beautiful writing. Yeah.
That book, I finished it and I immediately texted my dad and was like, you have to read this book. And he was like, I think it's going to make me cry. And I'm like, yeah,
That's
it
so cute. Oh my God. Have you ever
will.
been to her bookstore in, I think it's in Brooklyn, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I would
So, I
totally.
mean, that one was probably my favorite read of last year.
Yeah. Oh, that was beautiful. Thank you for reminding me of that one. She's so great. Can you please tell us about a moment that you knew that you had ink in your veins?
Oh, they all make me sound like such a silly little kid, but it was actually in like first grade. My favorite teacher through the entire time that I was at school was actually my first grade teacher. I just didn't realize in first grade that not all teachers were as awesome as her.
Oh, that's
But no, she
adorable.
was fantastic. Mrs. Kalatsis was her name. And one day she loved to teach us about time management. Like she was really big on you're all very fidgety and you think 5 minutes is so much less time than it is and all this stuff. And so she had all these different things that she would do to try and teach us to like understand the concept of time takes a while. And one day she after towards the end of the year when we all could write, she sat us down with a piece of blank paper and a pencil. And she said, okay, we're going to write for the next, I think it was 10 minutes or something. And you can't stop. You have to just write the whole time. You have to write me a
Oh my
story.
goodness.
And we're going to learn how long that time is, and we're going to write something. And so I wrote, and I didn't find it difficult. So
Yeah.
I remember I just put my head down and started writing, and I wrote this very silly 6-year-old story about going to the royal show with my mom and getting on the chairlift and it was just like a kind of what we did sort of story. And I just was like, oh, I'm writing, I'm writing, I'm writing. And the time was up like that to me. Like it went so quickly. And I looked around and everyone else had written like 3 sentences and I'd written a page and a half. And I just was like, I just remember thinking, this is the thing for me. Like
Oh,
this is the
that's
one thing that I just
gorgeous.
get and it makes sense to me. And after that I would always communicate in writing, preferably before communicating in any other way. Like if I had a fight with my mother, I would write her a note and like put it under her bedroom door to explain my position. So,
That is,
I
I
don't
love that so
know.
much. What a gift for her to give you. I've talked about this before on the show, but I had a teacher who, about that age, assigned us our first essay, but we didn't know what an essay was, but it had to be 100 words. It had to be like a 100 word something. And I took it home, put it off. It was, late Sunday night. I knew I was going to be able to do it, and I sat down to do it. And then I realized, I wrote a couple of sentences, and then I counted them, and it was almost 100 words. And I remember just thinking, but I'm loving this. This is fun. I can write a lot of words, and I can enjoy it. But the teachers who showed us that, they just like, what a gift. Is she still around? Have
I
you
don't
looked her up?
know where she is these days. She taught at the same school my grandmother taught at, and my grandmother had a lot of contacts there, but she unfortunately passed away a few years ago. So I've kind of lost touch with that whole side of my nan's You
like
could life,
always.
but
they're all on Facebook. I know this because one of my favorite
that's
teachers, Mr.
true.
Epperheimer, was my fifth grade teacher, and every time I publish a book, he gives me a little congratulatory thing on Facebook. So if
That's
Mrs.
so
Kalachi
cute.
is around, I bet she would love to hear that.
I should look her up. I've just never, it's always felt like a silly thing to do. But yeah, no,
Not
she was
silly.
great. I had some
She
other
changed
good
your
teachers.
life.
I want to walk back my earlier comment, but she was definitely up there in, like, top. She was my number one, but there was a top five.
I believe you. I believe you. All right. And lastly, can you tell us a little bit about radiant heat? We alluded to some of the subject matter, but
Sure.
can you give us a little bit of a log line?
So it's a it uses the tropes of a thriller to interrogate issues of intimate partner violence and violence against women in Australia, and also questions of, what happens after a big catastrophe that changes everything, and how do people deal with it. It's set in the aftermath of a really giant bushfire or wildfire, and the main character very narrowly survives that and then discovers a dead woman in a car in her driveway who she doesn't know. And she has to, well, she feels compelled to find out who this woman is and why she was coming to see her. So yeah, that's it, I
That's
guess, in a
awesome.
nutshell.
And where can we find you online?
You can find me on mostly these days on Instagram, Sarah Jane Marie. Marie is Maree. I think that's the Irish spelling. I'm not sure. Anyway, and I am also on the platform not formerly known as Twitter with the exact same handle, but
Perfect.
much less active there.
I'm hearing that a lot from writers now. Thank you so much for being on the show. That was delightful, and
Thank
I'm so
you.
glad to have met you.
Yes, nice to meet you too. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of Ink in Your Veins. You can reach me at my website, rachelherron.com, and you can also support me at patreon.com/Rachel, RACHAEL, where I have all sorts of great stuff for writers for as little as $1 a month. And do sign up for my free writer's email list of encouragement at rachelherron.com/write. Now, get to writing, my friends.